Hello, this is Yaro Starak, and welcome to another interview with an entrepreneur. And today I have Chris Guillebeau on the line with me, and we're going to talk about a whole range of things. Chris has come onto my show to talk about, I guess, his story, of course. He's also got a book out there, and he's basically, I did some research on this guy before I jumped on this call, and he sounds like a traveling nomad who has internet businesses, but hopefully we can break that down to something a bit more specific. So, Chris, welcome to the call.
Oh, thanks for having me, man.
Now, I'd like to go back to your beginnings a little bit, but I have to ask, given you travel to 25 different cities a year, that's the sort of catchphrase I got from your websites. Is this something like when you were an 8-year-old sitting at home, did you always say, I just want to get out of my house and go see the world, or your parents already taking you around the world? You know, where does this passion come from?
Yeah, it kind of developed a bit along the way. It wasn't like I didn't have the vision when I was 8. But when I was 6, I believe, my parents were split up and living in different places. And my mom remarried this guy who was in the U.S. Air Force. And so we moved around a lot because of that situation. And we actually lived in Asia and the Pacific for a couple of years. So I had kind of an early childhood of living in the Philippines and then living lots of different places in North America. So that did help a little bit. But then it probably wasn't until I was 22 or so, I went overseas to West Africa, and I lived in the region there for about 4 years, volunteering for a charity. And that was just a great experience that kind of, you know, affected my worldview in a lot of different ways. But one of those ways was travel, and that I went to a lot of different places and also lived and worked in South Africa for a while and lived and worked in Europe. And so it was kind of a cumulative effect where after I'd been a number of places, I started getting more curious about the rest of the world and wondering what it was like, you know, elsewhere, and what was the same and what was different. And so I just kind of wanted to find a way to make travel more a part of, you know, everything that I was doing. And that's how the whole, like, visit every country in the world quest came about.
You said you were 18, was it, when you went to West Africa?
I think I was about 22.
22, okay. So you had a life prior to that. Did you, you went to
high school?
I did
a bit, yes. Well, I was a high school dropout, actually, and I don't know how the system works in Australia, but, you know, in the U.S., you're supposed to go to high school, you know, through age 18 or so, and I went for 1 year and then dropped out. I just didn't do very well in the traditional, you know, education system, but I was able to go on to college and university. Kind of snuck into that. So I had never had a high school degree, but then I did have a college degree. I was also a musician. I was playing jazz music at night. I wasn't the best employee. You probably won't be surprised to hear. So I had to find a way to support myself. And that's how I started with entrepreneurship many years ago, more than 10 years ago now, just out of a motivation to, like, pay the bills, you know. I wasn't trying to build anything necessarily, not building a brand or, you know, a real business or anything, but just trying to hustle and do whatever I could. So in those early days, it was a lot of stuff with eBay when that was a brand new website. And then later on, I learned about affiliate marketing and building a list and, you know, Google AdWords and AdSense and a lot of the things that, you know, you've been talking about for a long time. I just kind of learned along the way. And so that's kind of how that came about.
Okay. Before we look at all these different business projects, I'm curious, how does one get into university without getting a high school graduation?
Yeah, great question. So, again, the system may be different in different parts of the world, but in the United States, we have what we call community college or junior college, and it's usually like a 2-year institution in which, you know, most students will then transfer to a real university. Now, of course, you're supposed to have a high school diploma to get into one of those, but I just managed to register, you know, I kind of snuck in, and then after the first semester, the first term, someone realized, one of the administrators realized I didn't have the high school degree, but I had done pretty well, you know, in that first term, and so they thought, well, we can't kick him out now. So I kept going, you know, and I did pretty well, again, because I'm studying things that I'm interested in. And then I was able to transfer from the 2-year institution to the 4-year university. And again, you're supposed to have the high school diploma. But because I was transferring, they only looked at the previous institution as opposed to going way back to the high school. So that's kind of how it worked out.
Sounds like you got lucky in a couple of places.
I did get lucky, of course. And I think all of us do, right? Like all of us, you know, we get fortunate in a number of ways. And then we're able to, sometimes we look back and we're like, yeah, I was so smart, but not really, you know, like maybe there's some intelligence, but then there's also, you know, good fortune.
Just to clarify, if you were to drop out in high school here after only 1 year, you'd be like 13 years old. Now, I think you were...
I was age 15 in the U.S. when that happened.
So after junior high, right? Is that...
Yeah, correct.
Okay. So you're 15 and are you living with your mom or...
Yeah, and they weren't so happy about the whole dropout situation. But at the same time, like, you know, we don't have to go into the whole thing. But I also had a difficult childhood, and I was kind of in trouble with the law and things. And so, you know, my behavior at that point was actually pretty good. So they were like, well, it's not good that Chris isn't going to school, but, you know, at least he's not stealing cars or breaking into other people's houses. Right. And the thing is, I was actually motivated to learn. I just didn't like, you know, the high school structure, at least, you know, where I went. And then I actually started college or university pretty soon. So I started when I was 16, actually ended up graduating when I was 19, which in the U.S. most people don't graduate until they're 22 or 23. So it's kind of funny that I skipped, you know, the whole like formal education thing, but I actually managed to finish a couple of years, you know, ahead of many of my peers. So it worked out well in the end. Mm. I'm not sure I necessarily recommend it, you know, but worked out.
It does demonstrate that there's a need for an alternative path, I think, for people that just don't want to go through the schooling system. But that's a different discussion altogether.
Exactly.
I do like the fact that you lowered the bar so far that your parents were happy you dropped out of school just that you weren't stealing cars.
Right, yes. Again, it wasn't a big strategy. Like, it wasn't like I intended to do it that way, but, you know, that's how it turned out.
Okay. So you go to community college, you get into university, and you did what degree?
Degree in sociology.
Okay. And any reason why? Were you just what you're interested in, or?
I just kind of wandered into a sociology course and really liked it. It was the study of people in groups and the study of human behavior, and I really enjoyed it. I also did a degree in psychology as well, but I kind of liked the sociological aspect more of understanding like interaction and different issues of poverty and families and race and ethnicity. And I kind of liked stuff like that. And it's funny because it doesn't necessarily train you for a specific job or career. But, you know, looking back a decade now, I can see that a lot of what I do in my work and my writing, like I think I actually, you know, did learn a fair amount at that time that I apply now in different ways.
Okay, so throughout your university days, were you doing any jobs or running any kind of business?
Yeah, I started the business during probably the last year of university, in which I only had, you know, 2.5 years of university because I kind of compressed it. So I did.
You went from high school dropout to express learner at university?
More or less. That was another story, which I don't know if we have time to get into, but I registered for as many courses as I could, and then there was a maximum course load where you couldn't register for any more. So then I just went to another institution and registered at the same time, you know, for the maximum number of courses that I could then there at that place. And then I did that for several quarters or semesters, and then finally I transferred all the credits, you know, to one institution to graduate.
Your parents must have been like, what's going on here?
Yeah. You know? And actually, I did have some jobs. I had like a pizza job, and I had like delivering flowers, you know, on Valentine's Day, and I had just a bunch of random stuff. I mean, just doing all these different things. And so the schedule was really, you know, like, the schedule was really crowded. And sometimes I would go to the wrong course, or I'd go to the wrong job, like wearing the wrong uniform, you know, because that was the Tuesday job and not the Wednesday one, or so, you know. So it was a little bit random for a while.
You obviously needed to keep busy. That was important to you, I'm guessing.
Yeah, keeping busy, and also I would say doing more than one thing, because, you know, you mentioned earlier that you're working on this startup, and I really respect that. I respect people who have the focus to kind of, you know, say no to a lot of projects, you know, focus on one big thing. Like, I respect that. For me, I don't really have that ability. I'm much better. At least I feel like I'm more energized and more motivated to do a lot of different things at once. You know, fortunately I've matured from, you know, working at a pizza job and going to community college, you know, to doing some, you know, to building things that are bigger and more significant, but I still don't have that same kind of focus that I think you have.
Well, take us through then how you did start your first, I guess, project that wasn't a job. Were you at university for that, or was that after graduation?
That was at university, and I was working the last job I ever did, which was for FedEx, or a version of Federal Express. And I was working in the middle of the night, and I was getting paid, I guess, about $8 an hour or so. You know, so not a lot of money, and working in the middle of the night carrying boxes, it was difficult work. And then in the morning, I'm supposed to be fresh and go to class. And so it was tough. And then there was a snowstorm where I was living at the time in Memphis, Tennessee. So one night I went to get in my car and drive to work, and my car basically, like, you know, I didn't have an accident, but it kind of slid into a snowbank. And I thought, okay, there's no way I'm going to work, you know. And the problem with skipping that night was the next day I didn't want to go either. You know, like, once I had broken that habit, it was like, I don't want to go back, you know. And so never returned, you know, to that job. They mailed me my, you know, remaining paycheck or whatever. And then I thought, okay, I need a way to, you know, obviously I need to pay the bills somehow. So there was this brand new website called eBay.com where I had seen, I'd never sold anything there, but I had, you know, seen it and maybe purchased some CDs or something. I don't know.
And so I thought, late 90s, Chris?
It is indeed. Exactly. Yeah. 1999, like right before 2000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I started with things around my house, like my little apartment, my student apartment. I had like, you know, old toys, old clothes, old books, you know. This is before digital cameras, or at least before I had a digital camera. So I would like actually like take pictures with a, you know, old school camera and get the film developed and then go to the university to use the only scanner that I had access to. I mean, it's very like old school, you know. But finally like made the listings, and long story short, I found that I could make $20 an hour, you know, or $25 an hour. And I was like, this is great. Like, this is 2 to 3 times, you know, what I did before. And the only problem was I started running out of things around my house to sell. You know, the house is getting kind of bare. Mm-hmm. So then I just started like paying attention to other suppliers. I was like, who is doing this like as a living, and where do they get their inventory from? And so I would look and see like, okay, this person's selling a lot of, you know, a lot of these kind of books or laptop cases or whatever it was, cigars, you know, Lego toys, video games, whatever. And then I would go and I would say Google, but this is, you know, I was using like other search engines at the time, AltaVista, Lycos, whatever, you know, I'd like try to track down the source of that product. And then I would try to order 10 of them. Basically, I kind of learned as I went along. So I built this small little wholesaling business. I sold coffee, was one of the things that I did the most of. You know, just over the course of six months, you know, I got to where I could support myself pretty well. And all of a sudden, you know, I was 22 years old and I was making not a ton of money, but I was making like $50,000 a year. And that's a lot of money when you've never, you know, made money at all before. So that's how the evolution of the business went at that point.
Right. So you went out and bought yourself a new car, some bling, you know, all the things you always wanted, right?
Like, I didn't actually have much to spend the money on. I was just happy that I could go and eat dinner like at a, you know, a $10 place as opposed to a $5 place. So yeah, it was weird.
Okay, so you're 22. I'm assuming you're still in Memphis.
Yeah, I think by that point I may have moved to Alabama, but I'm still in the United States, in the southern United States. Yeah. Okay.
And eBay's going well. You don't have a job anymore, I'm assuming.
Correct. No job. No. I'm working like 2 to 3 hours a day, you know, doing the eBay thing, learning how to build websites. Just trying to like explore the whole like internet marketing thing before it was called internet marketing, you know, just learning, you know, just learning stuff and doing small little projects and not really building anything significant. As I said, just like, how can I, you know, support myself? And so I'm doing that 2 to 3 hours a day. And the rest of the time I'm playing music, I'm going to the bookstore and reading, I'm, you know, just whatever I want to do. And that was fine for a while, but I think like pretty soon I realized like, okay, I need something. Like, it's nice to have no responsibilities, effectively. But, you know, I think all of us actually want to do something with our lives. We want to build something. You know, we want to actually contribute something meaningful. And so that to me was, like, after 9/11, that was a turning point for me and a lot of other people, of course. But after 9/11, I thought, okay, like, is there some way I can contribute to the world? Like, I'm very fortunate that I've got this life that, you know, I can essentially work 2 to 3 hours a day and have everything that I need. What can I really offer the world? So that's how the whole volunteer thing, you know, that's how I heard about this opportunity in West Africa. And I thought, okay, I need to find a way to respond to this.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about that. Did you continue to run the eBay business? I'm assuming it's an online business, so it's easy enough to travel with. Is that?
I did indeed. You know, for 4 years while I was overseas, you know, by that point I was married. So Jolie, my wife, was with me as well. And, I used the business income to support us living in West Africa. And of course it didn't require, you know, a whole lot of money to do that. But still it was nice that I felt like I was providing, you know, I felt like, you know, okay, I'm volunteering through the day, but then all I need is 1 or 2 hours a day. We had this really shaky internet connection via satellites. But it worked, you know, and I could go online and, you know, I did a little bit of consulting. I built some websites, did the eBay thing a little bit. My brother was back in the States, so he helped with some of the shipping that we needed to do for the U.S. and Canada. And it wasn't like a big focus during that time because the focus was on the volunteering, but it was still really good that, you know, that I had that source of income.
So you went from stealing cars to volunteering in Africa.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't really regret either one of them. I don't regret the car stealing. I was 14, but yes, I would say that both of them were both of them made a big impact on my life.
I've noticed a trend that a lot of successful people seem to have this sort of topsy-turvy background. You need to go steal cars if you want to be a successful entrepreneur. It's
right. The takeaway from this interview.
Yeah. So, okay, so you've done the West Africa stint, which obviously would have been life-changing, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean,
just
definitely.
Seeing the way people live there.
Sure.
Did you pretty much continue it as is while you were in Africa and then started changing when you got back to the States? Or, take us
forward. Yeah, so we were there 4 years. At the end of the 4 years, moved back to the States. This time we moved to Seattle. We had always heard about the Pacific Northwest area of the U.S. and wanted to live there. I was also a little bit worried because of the whole education situation. I was worried I hadn't really learned much because I skipped high school, no regrets there. But then I also kind of rushed through the whole university experience. So basically, I wanted to go to grad school, and I felt like that was the next step for me. So I applied for and was accepted to a master's degree program at the University of Washington. So we moved to Seattle. I think that was 2006. And while I was there, I was doing the program, which was fine. It wasn't amazing, but it was fine. And while I was there, I was also thinking, okay, what's the next step? Because I still have the same feeling about what am I building? Am I really contributing to something? I felt like that when I was in Africa, but now I'm back home. So what am I doing? And I wanted to be a writer. But I had no platform. I wanted to write a book, but I thought, who's going to give me a book deal? How does that work? And I have no platform. I felt like I've done all this stuff. I'd been to maybe 70 countries at that point. But, if you Google my name, there was three results. Nobody knew who I was.
Whoa. You've been to 70 countries already by that time?
I think so. Yeah. I was okay. 50, when I, it was 50 or so at the midpoint of West Africa.
Right.
And then I, yeah, added about 20 or so.
Okay, so we've missed a few things in this 4 years.
Sorry.
While you
Sorry.
Were in Africa. So you didn't stay in Africa the whole 4 years then?
Mostly. Well, we were living on a hospital ship. So the hospital ship, naturally wasn't stationary. It would be stationary for about 6 months at a time, and that's when we would be doing the work. We would go to Liberia for 6 months. We would go to Sierra Leone for 6 months. But then, we also did a bit of sailing, and every year the ship would go to Europe. We'd go on a public relations tour. We'd also get all our supplies. We would do a dry dock, all that kind of stuff. So every year we would have ports in Germany and Holland and Spain and the UK. So from there I started traveling. I went to a number of Eastern European countries for the first time. I had a love of travel. So after I'd been to a few of these places, in a group setting, I started kind of going off on my own. And, towards the final 2 years of that commitment, it was my job to represent the organization to the host governments we were working with. And so I did a lot of flying around. I would fly and meet the Minister of Health. I got to meet a couple of presidents, which was amazing and great. And, the whole time I'm 25 years old, it just feels like it's normal. This is just my life or whatever, but travel was a big part of it. So yeah, I got to about 50 countries there. And then once we started getting closer to moving back to the States, I traveled even more. During the 2 years while I was going to grad school in Seattle, for every break, every term break or during the summers or whatever, then I would take off on my own. I would go for maybe 2 weeks, did Southeast Asia, did Latin America, went to East Africa where I'd never been before, went to the Middle East for the first time. So around this time, it's becoming an addiction and something that I'm really focusing on.
Okay. So just for anyone who's interested in maybe doing volunteering of the same route you did, what's that organization that you joined?
I worked with an organization called Mercy Ships. And it's a global organization. The headquarters is in North America, but they have offices, all over the world. And I would also encourage people, if you want to do something like that, but you're not sure what's best, reliefweb.org or reliefweb.int is a great website because they have lots of different organizations. You can read about different volunteer opportunities as well as you just kind of get more of an understanding about aid work in general.
So you lived on a boat for a long time. That's different. When did the wife fit into all of this?
I was going to say she's my high school sweetheart, but since I didn't really go to high school, we've been together more or less since age 17, and she's a year older than me, so that's about 15 years now.
Okay, and did she come with you on the boat?
She did indeed, yes. She was our ticket there because you're supposed to be somewhat qualified to go and do these kind of positions, and I had no qualifications, essentially.
Right.
Whereas she was a high school teacher and, you know, had a diploma and a certification and all of that. So they were at the, it just so happened at the time we applied, there was a shortage of teachers. And so they accepted her, and then they didn't know what to do with me, but I came with her. So that was my way in.
Wow. You were baggage.
Essentially, yes. And then I spent the first year in just doing menial labor, essentially. Like I was in charge of a warehouse, and I'm like moving stuff around, and I'm like loading cargo into my Land Rover and driving it, you know, up country to a village clinic. And so in some ways it's very, you know, it's very menial, but at the same time, it's very rewarding because I'm actually like there on the front lines and like really delivering, you know, things that are helpful and meeting people. And so it was a great experience. It's a great experience to have done that. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I didn't go into it like in a senior position.
It is kind of funny that you left the FedEx job packing boxes.
There is some irony there.
Yeah. To get yourself into Africa where you're packing boxes again.
Yeah, and the thing is, I was never actually very good at it. I mean, you would think it doesn't take much skill to pack boxes, but it actually does. Like, there's a whole, like, protocol to it and the way you're supposed to shrink wrap and how you stack the weight and all, you know. And I never got good at it. So, fortunately, I got moved out of that position after a while.
Okay, and it sounds like if you're meeting presidents, you know, moved up the ranks pretty quickly to go from boxes to representing the organization. Like, how did that happen?
I guess at some point someone saw something in me and someone saw some potential and you know, just said like, we need this guy to do something else. And so that's another one of those turning points that I'm very grateful for. And maybe it had something to do with my motivation, because I always wanted to help. I always wanted to do stuff. I would always volunteer for tasks. But I think it's also, you know, what you said at the very beginning of the interview, there's always a luck element to any part of our lives. And so, whenever we get those opportunities, like the question is then, are we going to make the most of them, you know? And so when that opportunity came about, it was essentially life changing to go from like carrying the boxes around to meeting the presidents. And so I tried to, you know, make the most of it. And I tried to learn from it and to treat it with respect.
It wasn't a jump of that magnitude though. It wasn't like, well, you're doing a great job with those boxes. Now we want you to go get on a plane and... and meet the president. Sure.
It wasn't quite like that, but it was pretty quick. I mean, it was maybe, you know, 3 to 6 month transition. I did another job where I was responsible for some educational teams. Someone got sick and like a mid-level manager got sick and he had to leave. And so I took his role. So I was kind of interim manager, you know, of a couple of smaller things for a while. And so I think that helped. But it was fairly quick in the sense that, you know, I made a 2-year commitment initially to go and carry boxes and I was happy with that. But then, you know, within the first year, essentially, I went from carrying the boxes to meeting the presidents.
Amazing. So I'm assuming all this time eBay is still keeping the bank balance going upwards.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like making a huge amount of money, but, you know, I was making like $20,000 to $30,000 a year, maybe up to $40,000. You know, again, not a great living, but I had very few expenses. And, you know, most of the people that we were working with, like our other volunteers, they were really struggling and, you know, just trying to maintain like a base level of support. And so in that regard, you know, we were more fortunate because we had, you know, more than a lot of those people did. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when it came to decide to leave that after 4 mm-hmm. years and go to Seattle, it was just time? You just knew?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It was just time. I noticed... like a commitment like that, you have to give it everything you have. And if you start giving it a little bit less than everything, it's not good, you know? And so I guess maybe about 3 years in, I started just realizing I was a little bit tired and I wasn't as excited about everything that I was doing as I had been. And I kind of observed, you know, in that environment, I mean, we're working in like post-conflict settings and, you know, it is a pretty challenging emotional situation. It's a great, rewarding, you know, thing to do, but it is challenging. And so I noticed that some people who had stayed a lot longer, there were some people who stayed for more than 10 years. And among those people, there were a couple of exceptions, but I noticed that a lot of those people just kind of began to get bitter about the whole thing, about, you know, bitter about aid work or, I don't know, just kind of cynical. And I was always an optimist. And I didn't want to lose that. And so I guess I felt like I was shifting focus. And I thought, you know, I felt like I had the best job in the world, but the best time to leave the best job in the world is right before you get tired of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And your wife, I'm assuming, is all, you know, part of all these decisions. And
of course.
When you traveled to Eastern Europe and everywhere you went, was she going along too?
Yeah, well, a good way to put it is she was a part of all those decisions. She's also been to maybe 50 countries or so of her own. And so many of those countries, especially during that time, we were traveling together. But then that's also when I started traveling independently the last year or two. I did some of it for my work, and then also I just did it because I – you know, like I went on one small independent trip and I was like, oh, I love this. I want to do this. And I just want to travel on my own. It's not that I don't want to be with anyone else. I kind of like, you know, traveling for 7 to 10 days, you know, on my own. So with Jolie, it was kind of like an ongoing conversation about, you know, with me saying, I would love to travel more by myself. Is that okay with you? And, you know, what are you comfortable with? What am I comfortable with? That kind of conversation. So we had that over the years, especially over the past 5 to 7 years, as I've been, you know, based more in the States and traveling, you know, much more on this quest to visit everywhere.
All right. So I think we know where the taste for travel really starts to first flower. <Yep. laughs> Because you're on a boat that travels around. So take us back to where we were before. We were in Seattle. You were starting some postgraduate studies, and you continued to travel and continued to do internet business. Is that?
Yep, that's correct on both points. And I started kind of picking up the travel. And at this point, I started learning more about what I call travel hacking. And it's kind of funny because now I do that some of that kind of stuff with my business. But at the time, I was just interested in using it myself. And so I was interested in frequent flyer miles and round the world tickets and, you know, different like pricing discrepancies and all these like arbitrage things, all this kind of stuff that I could use to make my travel easier. And so I started traveling in 2-week periods. I would have a term where I had to do my coursework for 3 months, and then I would have a 2-week trip. And then I'd have another term for a while, and then I'd do a 2-week trip. And so that's when I started like really pursuing, and I set the goal at that time as well, the goal of visiting every country, because I had added up where I went and I thought, this is great. You know, I would love to go to 100 countries at some point in my life. And then I realized it's actually not going to be that difficult of a goal because I've already got so many already. And when you have a set number, you can kind of pick and choose. I can say, oh, you know, I'll go to Australia, but I'm not going to go to Nauru, you know? So you can kind of choose the easy countries. And so that's when I thought, let's increase the challenge. You know, let's set the goal of trying to visit every country in the world. And so I officially set that, I think, in 2007. And then in 2008 is when I started writing about it. That's when I started the Art of Nonconformity blog. And, you know, things kind of went from there.
So we're getting closer to your present then, because that's what you're still working on today. Now, you weren't still doing eBay this whole time, though, were you?
Not so much. No. I had learned about, you know, information products. I made a few different things in the travel field. I made a couple of like airfare guide reports, put those out. I did some affiliate stuff. I had the Google AdSense AdWords arbitrage thing going for a while. At this point, it's still not very strategic. You know, it's making more money. It made up to 6 figures a year, you know, basically in the range of at least $80,000 a year, but never much more than like $150,000. So I'm, you know, I'm doing well, I'm supporting myself, but I'm still not at this point, at least, building anything that's lasting. You know, I'm not creating assets or any of the things that you talk about.
Mm-hmm. But doing all those things, it sounds like they might have suited your lifestyle, given that you were study, travel, sort of jumping all over the place.
Right.
You know, it's a business that requires you just checking in now and then.
Correct.
Especially if you're not sure you want to do the business, because that's a given your personality, Chris. It sounds like for you to build an asset, you have to really, really, like, you know, see yourself doing this one thing for several years, and that's not your style by the looks of things. Except for maybe
sure. You know, I think I might be getting a little better at it now, but still, at this point in the story, 2008, you know, 2007, 2008, you know, yes, I'm still more focused on like, what do I need to do, and what does that cost? How do I need to achieve the money to then put it towards this goal? I'm more focused on things like that.
Now, I am curious though. A lot of people, you know, set the intention to, over the years, maybe do AdSense arbitrage, maybe do eBay, write an ebook and sell it, and they kind of fail, or worse, stumble from one to the next, sort of starting one and then going, ah, I'm not enjoying this, I'm not getting a result, I'm going to do this next shiny object, and really never getting any of them to work. It sounds like on some level you got all of these things to work.
I got a lot of things to work, certainly, but we haven't covered the failure stories. I mean, everybody has lots of projects they try that don't work, so I guess I just tried a lot of stuff, you know? And so you mentioned like stumbling from one to the other. I certainly stumbled, you know, from one to the other, but I made sure that a lot of them were successful, I guess. I mean, I could tell you, you know, a story of something that worked and a story of something that didn't work, if you like. But basically, my whole mantra was, let me deconstruct things. You know, if I see someone out there, what are they doing? What are all the pieces to it? I mean, I think a lot of people fail to deconstruct all the pieces. They just see one thing. You know, they see like one thing that you're always doing or Chris is doing or whoever, and then they copy that one tactic, and then they don't see the results. And they think, oh, you know, I've done it wrong. And what they did wrong was they failed to understand like the whole strategy. And there's more than one step. And so I guess what I got to be good at, for better or worse, was trying to see like every step, you know, in the process. And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of things didn't work, but then enough things worked that it was fine.
Well, maybe in 5 minutes, you can just kind of go through the different things you did, like from, I'm assuming you're in Seattle, you're studying a degree. Mm-hmm. eBay, did you grow tired of eBay, or did you...
Yeah, I got tired of it, and I think it also changed. I think a lot of technology things like that, and I would say probably the Google AdSense AdWords as well, though I have no idea what's happening with it now. A lot of things like that in the beginning, you know, in the beginning, those markets are inefficient. And so whenever there's an inefficient market, that's a great opportunity for an entrepreneur or someone who aspires to be an entrepreneur, because you can be sloppy and you can make a lot of mistakes and you can still take advantage of things. So in the beginning, eBay was essentially a seller's market, you know, at least in the United States. In the beginning, like, everyone's jumping on eBay. They think it's this huge value, you know, as a buyer. I mean, you could literally like go to the store and buy some things and then list them on eBay, and some people would pay more, you know, for them. I mean, you could actually have a business like that. But over time, of course, with anything, with any technology, you know, efficiency comes in, more sellers enter the market, more people are selling the same things, and then the business becomes efficient. So I guess for a long time, you know, I was good at exploiting inefficiencies, you know, which is fine. And I mean, it's okay to make a living at that. I just ultimately found myself dissatisfied with that, because in addition to the fact that I'm not really changing the world, the business is also not very sustainable, because as soon as, you know, other sellers enter, or as soon as the marketplace corrects itself, then I'm out of business, right?
Okay, so from eBay, you went next to?
What did I go next to? Built a lot of different little websites, built a couple of websites and sold them, did some website design, actually. I did some consulting. I did some, like, website traffic generation things. I did, this is taking me way back. I mean, I haven't worked on anything unrelated to what I'm doing now for more than 5 years. So I don't know. I did some affiliate marketing stuff. I built little one-page websites, you know, for different affiliate stuff, for books, for the early version of the Amazon affiliate program. Not just eBay, but other auction sites. You know, for a long time, Yahoo had auctions. Amazon had auctions for a while. Lots of different stuff.
Wow. And all this was sort of just you sitting at home on your computer just testing things.
Yep, essentially.
Okay.
Again, all of it worked, you know, but enough of it worked that that's all I had to do.
You must have been good at, I don't know, something about this, because there's a lot of things there that just, you know, you couldn't do them all at once, or you really would need to focus on, you know, getting the customers, for example, for a consultancy practice, or selling website design or traffic generation.
Yeah.
You know, all those things require you setting up your own website and knocking on doors virtually, whatever the case may be, and convincing people to buy from you. So,
yeah, well, we're kind of compressing a little bit, because we're talking about like 7 years of 7 years of early entrepreneurial history in a short period of time. And also, I do think, like I said, there was a Wild West factor, you know, to some of the early days of the internet, that it was these days, I don't know if it's as easy to do some of those things, but I think in many ways it's actually easier to do other things. I mean, so the thing is, like, things are always changing, and you know, I guess one of the other things that I did well, and again, there's a long list of things I did not do well, but one of the other things I did somewhat well was I tried to be adaptable, and I tried to realize, like, okay, change is coming. Like with eBay, you know, change is coming. I'm not going to be able to keep doing this. You know, I'm not going to keep making these incredible profit margins, because there's going to be, you know, 20 other people selling the same thing. So therefore, I need to make a change. And the same thing with Google or with anything else.
Okay, well, I got a question I know everyone listening to this would be curious about, especially those with a wife or husband or children, mm-hmm. and who want to travel and study a degree and do all these things at the same time, and, you know, ultimately not be worried about having enough money coming in to support these dependencies, you know, pay for degrees, support the kids, support the partner. How did you make all this work? Is there one or two little things that you know, that because it's pretty scary, I think, to be booking flights overseas, wondering whether you're still going to keep selling stuff on eBay or whatever the thing you're doing is. Like, luck again? What's the?
Yeah, no, I don't know. This part, I don't know if I would say is luck. I think this is something that it becomes more comfortable with time, and you don't necessarily make all the big changes at once. And I'm not trying to think of the best way to answer your question. I guess I often hear from people, and I'm sure you do too, who are working at, like, they're working good jobs sometimes, but they want to, like, break out. They want to do their own thing. And they always frame this conversation as like this, you know, all or nothing thing. And they're like, I'm afraid to quit my job. And my always response is, well, why do you need to quit the job? I mean, like, I understand you want to create your own income, but why don't you do that now? Like, why don't you spend your free time and your lunch hour, like, reading up and listening to your Always podcast and then trying to set up your own website? And I mean, why not? As soon as you can get to making some kind of income, that's going to create more security for you. It's going to create more confidence, you know, with you. So I don't necessarily think, you know, everyone's ready to visit 25 countries a year. Everyone even wants to do that, you know? But I guess in my case, the only way that I know how to answer the question for me personally is I never tried to motivate myself into doing something that, you know, was not at least somewhat exciting and had some potential to be marketable. You know, I always did what I was excited about doing, and I was excited about a lot of different things. And so I didn't want to limit myself. You know, I did want to go to university. I did want to travel. I did want to have some kind of stable home life, and I wanted to have an income, and all those things are good. So why should we have to choose, you know, why do we have to pick two of those, you know? Like, why can't we just find a way to, you know, achieve all of them?
Good answer. You find a way to make it work.
I mean, seriously, you know, I mean, like, I don't mean to oversimplify. I just think we all make time for what's important to us. So, you know, if what's important to you is freedom and independence and, you know, doing what you love, why not make time for that?
Yeah. And like you said, it's not something that has to be from A to B. You can go A to Z and take every step slowly.
Exactly.
And, yeah. All right. Well, we were trying to compress a little bit, maybe perhaps too much into one interview here, Chris. So
we'll do another one.
We're getting closer to the present day. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more, because obviously, you know, most of your time now, I'm presuming, is to do with the art of nonconformity and that sort of area. So can you tell us how that all entered into the picture?
Yes. So, you know, at the culmination of all these things that we've talked about, it was, you know, 2008, and I was finishing university with a master's degree. And as I said, I felt like I'd been fortunate to have all these different experiences living in West Africa, you know, been to 70 countries, always self-employed, you know. So all these things were somewhat interesting, but they were kind of unrelated. And I felt like there was no convergence point. And as I said, I wanted to be a writer, but I had no platform. And so the next step for me was, let's create convergence, you know, between these things. And you know, so I started the blog, The Art of Nonconformity, in 2008. And, you know, I just kind of put it up there, and I'm like, hey, this blog is the chronicle of my visiting every country in the world. And along the way, I'll share, you know, the lessons that I learned. So launched the blog. I mean, I learned a number of things in that first year. Probably one of the most important things was, I mean, it seems kind of basic at the time, but it seems kind of basic now. But at the time, like, you know, I started writing about visiting every country in the world. And I realized pretty quickly that some people would like that and some people would be inspired by it. But the vast majority of people would say, well, that's great. Like, good for you. But how does that help me? You know? And it's a very good and valid question. And so I kind of started focusing a little bit more on my readers and focusing on, like, okay, what is this whole question of nonconformity? There's obviously many different ways to look at it, not just travel, you know, but all kinds of different things. And so so I learned to be a little bit more reader focused. You know, I don't know how to kind of compress the next 4 years, but you know, basically I wrote the first book, The Art of Nonconformity. I did an unconventional book tour to every state in the U.S. and every province in Canada. Along the way, I met, you know, all kinds of amazing, remarkable people. That also kind of helped me, you know, refocus and recenter the whole project, because, you know, I don't know how it's been for you. I'm sure it's maybe the same way. Like, if you're just writing, you know, words on a screen and then you have comments or tweets or something, that's one thing. But then you actually, like, meet people who have been changed through your work or somehow identify with it, then it kind of changes things. At least for me, it did. So I don't know where we are now. You know, like, it's been 4 years, and I love everything that I do. And my question now is, where are we going from here? Do lots of meetups wherever I go. I put on an annual conference every year called the World Domination Summit. We started that last year. Our second one is this year with 1,000 people. Next book is coming out, going on tour for that. I want to keep doing what I'm doing and hopefully improving the quality of it, because in the beginning it wasn't so good like anything else, but you know, we continue to learn and continuous improvement and feedback and all that kind of stuff.
Is it safe to say that your income streams from the 2008 period, where you kind of maybe ended the playing, when I say playing around, the experiments with each of these different systems, and then you started this blog and then you became an author, did that become more of your sole focus on income streams, like information products and blogging?
Yeah, I would say I definitely created a lot more stability. And in the beginning, I had no idea. In the beginning with the Art of Nonconformity, I had no business model for it. I had no monetization strategy. I just wanted to write. But I ended up creating unconventionalguides.com and a few different information products related to the Art of Nonconformity. And I did that mostly in response to questions from readers. I noticed people were asking the same questions all the time about how do you travel and how does the self-employment thing work and what are the different approaches and all that. So I just started creating products in response to those needs. And yes, I mean, 100% of my income now for the past, you know, 3 years has been from everything related to Art of Nonconformity. And so I earn money from traditional publishing. I earn money from all the different information products. I have a membership site. I write a newspaper column. I do some speaking, but mostly I speak for free if it's a good fit or whatever. So I have a diversified income, but it is all kind of related to what I'm doing. So it's all kind of related to the concept of legacy work that I talk about.
Right. I am interested because the title, The Art of Nonconformity, and certainly that whole area, it's a little bit, I don't know, maybe vague in terms of, like, if I was going to do a marketing analysis and you wanted to say what's the problem you're solving for your target market, so you know how to sell your product. Because I had a similar problem with, I was writing about entrepreneurship a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was difficult to have a specific target market that wasn't too broad. Like, you know, I didn't want to be another how to start a business person or an online business, because I felt that was too generic. I wanted to get more specific. And for me, it was, you know, timing again, luck maybe, was great, because I was blogging. So I had the angle of showing how to people make money with blogging. And that was more focused and specific. And it's easier to teach something when you know, okay, they want to learn how to make money with a blog. Now, with the Art of Nonconformity, it sounds a little bit the same. Sort of, it's very big. It's a very broad subject. It's travel. It's income streams. It's you know, maybe just even learning how to do all the different things at once and making it work. But that's a lot of different target needs.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right, and especially in terms of a marketing analysis perspective. And so, obviously, there's some clear weaknesses there. I think the strength there is that it allows me to not get too pigeonholed and not too focused. And in my case, I've always done all these different things. And I was worried when I started the project, my biggest fear was not that I would fail. My biggest fear was that I would get tired of it. And, you know, I didn't want to do that. Like, I was turning 30 years old. I was like, I want to actually make something that's going to have lasting value. And so I knew for me that one of the easiest ways to do that is to deliberately keep it broad, you know, so that I can do a variety of things and a variety of expressions within that. And so, you know, the tagline for it is, you know, unconventional strategies for life, work, and travel. Now, as you would say, like, it doesn't get more broad than that, you know, it's very broad. But, you know, the good thing about it is that it's kind of allowed me to have like a big tent philosophy, and I welcome a lot of different people. You know, the readership is very diverse. It's almost split 50-50 between men and women. You know, it's very international and all ages. So I guess what unites all these people is an interest in change, an interest in progress, an interest in doing things differently. And so not all of them are interested in travel per se, and not all of them are interested in self-employment. But, you know, I can then, in terms of the business stuff, I can then segment a little bit. And I can say, okay, like, a lot of people, I have this core group that is interested in travel, so let me provide a solution for that, you know, core group. Then I have, you know, another core group that's really diehard entrepreneurship, you know. They really want to, like, find their own freedom, whatever it takes. I'm going to market something to them, you know. And I haven't been, like, highly strategic or specific about expanding much beyond that. But I feel like, you know, the weakness of this approach is exactly what you mentioned, which I agree with. But the strength is also that it allows you to do a lot of different things.
I think it's probably safe to say that your personal brand and your life story, the experiences you had, your ability to make it all work in a lot of ways ties it together. So
For better or worse.
Yeah, for better or worse, you get the benefits of that brand loyalty, and people are probably deciding to buy because they like you and your story more than anything else. And they just happen to want to know this specific slice of it, so the travel or the business or whatever it is. Would that sound right, given your customer base and you know how they've made that buying decision with you?
I would think for some of them, certainly. I would say hopefully they're going to buy something that's also going to be of some value to them. You know, hopefully like there is a clear benefit, you know, as well. And the benefit isn't just, you know, be like Chris. I'm sure some people will purchase based off that, but
learn
hopefully
from Chris, obviously, you know, be like Chris. Certainly. Right. I want to take one part of your life and make it similar, make it in part of my life. And obviously you've done it so I could learn from you. But, as a message to the marketplace, that's something that's, and this is an important question to answer for a lot of people, because I come across a lot of people who they want to be a teacher in some area that's very similar to all of us. Like they want to teach how to make money with a certain method, or they want to teach lifestyle design. So how they've been able to quit their job because they had one or two successful niche sites. Now, you know, that on the surface can sound a lot like every other person who's just happened to build one successful website and make money from it. Like I could say, what's different from Chris and Tim Ferriss, for example?
Right.
You know, I'm sure you must get that sort of comparison now and then. Maybe you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of the times it does come down to personality with these sorts of things, because you're different from Chris, from Tim in personality, and so am I. So
yeah, of course. And I would say like we all have our own unique histories and things that have influenced our worldview, and your story is different from mine, and Tim's is different from yours, and same with everybody else. And so, you know, I guess, you know, a couple of things that I focus on is the travel thing, like visiting every country. There's not a lot of people who've done that. You know, I have the experience of living in West Africa. You've actually like built and sold businesses, you know, on their own, which I think is unique, and very few people have actually done that. And of course, you know, we all have our different things.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's helpful for people because, it's a crowded marketplace now in these sort of spaces, and everyone's got a story to tell. So turning that into a business, you know, it's something that you can do. And I really like though that you mentioned that you visit every country. It's almost like a USP for Chris.
Right. It's also one that's kind of hard for people to copy, because I'm like, if you want to visit every country, go ahead, you know?
Yeah, I'm not doing that, Chris.
I see there's actually a number of other people who are trying to do it, but the thing is, like, they're so far behind. Like, I always think, like, good luck. You know, like, and if you can catch up, that's great. I mean, it's wonderful. You're going to have a great experience doing it, but it's taken me 10 years, you know, to get to where I am now.
It just makes me think of that, you know, the guy who did the dancing videos from around the world? He traveled.
Yeah, the Matt guy, yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's a USP, you know, something makes him stand out. So, okay, so you've made blogging work, you've made selling products and having a membership site work. You know, business models I've done myself, a lot of people have proven over the years that are fantastic. They're your stable income streams now. I'm guessing for you, is it just going forward, writing more books, you said, doing, I mean, your event sounds amazing, 1,000 people, and that's, is that all off the Art of Nonconformity background as well?
It is, yeah. I mean, the World Domination Summit, the goal there is just to bring together creative people from all different backgrounds and to talk about these things, to talk about travel and self-employment, but also to talk about the arts and education. I mean, I'm trying to just create a whole like third space there, and you know, it's going pretty well. So as for what I hope to do, yeah, I mean, I'm almost done with visiting every country. I hope to keep writing books. I actually like writing traditional books, and I want to keep doing that. But I don't know. I mean, I think we always have to challenge ourselves. We always have to like have something big. And so for me, like I'm coming to the end of the 10-year, you know, basically 10 years of traveling. So I think I need something else as well, but I haven't figured that out. If you figure it out, let me know.
Okay, I'll have a think for you. So your latest book, Chris, is, I'm looking at your website now, The $100 Startup. Is that the most current project?
Yep, that's the new book that's out, and I'm touring North America and eventually around the world. That's The $100 Startup is a couple, there's a couple of things. One, it's the stories of a number of unexpected or unconventional entrepreneurs who started businesses without any background in business training, without a lot of money, and by using the skills they already had. So I'm sure it's some of the same things you talk about. But in this case, many of the stories are people who have been laid off or fired from their job or otherwise just couldn't get a job during the recession, you know, went through some kind of big transition and ended up starting a business. So they had like a negative experience and ended up creating a you know, inspirational story out of it. So I met a lot of these people when I went on book tour before. And so I wanted to tell their stories. And then it's not just a collection of stories. Hopefully it's also a blueprint for readers to take action on it. So basically, you know, the whole message is, you know, if you want to start a business, you don't need a lot of money. You don't need an MBA. You don't need to beg the bank, you know, for money. You know, all you need is a product or service, a group of people willing to pay for it, and a means of getting paid. So I'm just trying to kind of break that down into very, you know, simple and easy to follow data-driven method.
Okay, it sounds very relevant for those just getting started in the building the income stream aspect of this lifestyle design. So let's give some URLs out here. We've talked a lot of different about a lot of different projects.
Sure, we'll begin
with the $100 startup. Where can we find out about that?
Sure, at 100startup.com, 100startup.com, or that should be any local bookstore or Amazon.
Okay, and then we've got, obviously, The Art of Nonconformity, so that's...
So that's actually my name, which no one can spell. It's chrisguillebeau.com. But to keep it simple, you can go to artofnonconformity.com and it will redirect you.
Okay. And that will give you information about the blog and the books on that same title.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have World Domination, right?
Yep. That one's pretty simple. WorldDominationSummit.com. Or they can just Google World Domination and we're almost at the top of the results for that. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, you want to have, at least have Google Domination for that, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. It was very competitive. There's lots of other stuff out there with World Domination, but we're almost there.
Okay. Any other projects you'd like to mention or maybe don't want to give people too much at once?
No, I feel like we've given so much and we've given a lot of information. I would just say, like, I love everything that you're doing, Yaro, and I really appreciate your listeners. So if there's something that I can help with or if they want to connect in any way, you know, just let me know and send me an email. I'm happy to give more input or more feedback or anything.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate that. And I'll obviously put all the links with this recording. So one more question. Now, normally I'd ask something you know, to help the readers that want to copy you. And this is pretty much the same question, but this is also something of my own interest. You are one of these people, like Tim Ferriss, like a whole lot of successful book author / entrepreneurs / traveling people who get university degrees. You know, you talked about 10 years of your life there where you've done all these sorts of things. A lot of those things are big lifetime goals. You know, most people want to travel the world, maybe write a book, have an independent income stream and not need a job, and at the same time do normal things like get master's degrees from university.
Right.
Now, 10 years, you know, it is a lot of time, but you seem to have managed to do a lot of these things all at the same time. I know from my experience traveling, you know, it drains me. I'm wiped out. So, you know, doing book writing at the same time as jumping from city to city, especially in short right. periods of time, would be very challenging. And you can write in the plane and all that. But what right. I'm curious about is there, and I bet you might have trouble answering this because I've yet to find someone who can answer this besides saying
okay.
do a time management course,
but right.
is there a way to be one, to become one of these people that seems to get everything done in their life as opposed to, you know, only doing maybe one big thing in 10 years, like
right.
just getting a master's degree or something like that?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, there probably isn't one big answer, but maybe just a couple of practical tips. You know, we talked about focusing on what you're motivated to do as opposed to trying to motivate yourself. For me, I always focus very much on deliverables. I don't focus at all on a time schedule. So I know, like a lot of other writers, they have this thing that, like, I get up and I write from 8 to 9 in the morning or whatever it is, and that's great. But because, as you said, like, I'm working from all these different cities, I'm always traveling, there's always something happening. So I don't necessarily focus on a time schedule, but I do focus on deliverables. And so for me, like, as a writer, you know, my own deliverable is 1,000 words a day. And my personal goal is, like, every day, no matter what's happening, I'm going to write 1,000 words. And they're probably not all going to be great. I may not be able to use it, but, like, 1,000 words a day is the minimum. If I do that every day, then over the course of a year, I'm going to have more than 100 blog posts. I'm going to have a full-length book. I'm going to have a number of, you know, newspaper columns and magazine articles, whatever else I need, guest posts, whatever, you know, that's going to give me everything that I need as long as I focus on the deliverables. So I do that with business stuff as well. Like if I'm building a project, it's like, okay, let's really break this down. What are all the steps? You know, I don't want to spend a lifetime or even 10 years, you know, doing this one thing. So how can I compress it? You know, and just getting specific and writing everything down and just kind of going from there is how I do it. So it's maybe not like the super big answer, but I do think there's practical things that all of us can do that will allow us to get more done.
Deliverables, outcomes. Yeah. All right. Good mm-hmm. answer. And do you manage to do sport and exercise and eat well and all that too?
I do. And I think that helps. I think that actually helps you get more done. I don't know what you think, but I think like, yes, for terms of exercise, I'm a runner mostly. And then I also do yoga. I do some weightlifting. I mean, just different things. And I feel like I actually get more done if I devote more time to exercise. I don't know how you find.
Well, yeah, I just, you know, it's certain hours in the day. Sometimes you have to decide, do I run now or do I write 1,000 words now?
Right. I have not found a way to combine the two. So maybe one of your listeners will figure that out and they can, you know, write the next blog post about that.
Yeah, there's an app in there somewhere for sure.
Probably.
All right, Chris, really appreciate you going into that background. I do feel like we could probably spend another hour or two diving into each of the different income streams and how you grew your blog and how you set up your membership site and information products and wrote your book. So... I think we're almost at an hour already. We're going to have to stop it there. I appreciate you taking the time to talk about the story, and I hope everyone listening spends some time checking out all of Chris's stuff. Maybe the $100 startup is one of the best entry points into your work right now, especially for my audience if you're looking to set up an income stream online. So thank you.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It was a great conversation. You asked some great questions.
And for everyone listening, if you are interested in getting the links to go with this or downloading some other interviews with successful entrepreneurs like Chris, you can head to my blog, which is at entrepreneurs-journey.com, or Google my name, which is Yaro, Y-A-R-O. And I hope to speak to all of you soon. Thank you, Chris, and thanks for listening, everybody.